Hello, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's Monday, the 14th of December, 2009, and I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. Well, tonight we're doing a special show to follow up on the weekend's Walk Against Warming and the unique kind of one-off event for some of our people in Sydney who've been involved in some of our other activist activities, basically getting involved in going out onto the street, talking about questions in the area of climate change and carbon dioxide. It's quite an important step. And, you know, there's a lot of issues associated with that that are quite difficult. And there are many complex scientific questions which are difficult for anyone to get their head totally around. And I think that what we saw on Saturday, which was the Walk Against Warming March, and several of us went out, and we had people from several different activist groups, one of them being We Are Change Sydney, the other being Truth Movement Australia, led by Phil Davis, and we also had David Zwolski from Zeitgeist Australia, and we had Bill Catalianis from the Australian Climate Skeptics. Now, I just want to kind of point out that in my experience, the one of the biggest problems we've got in trying to bring logic to this debate is that the science itself is so deeply corrupted and so full of irrational inclusions and, you know, appeals to emotion that are then cloaked in, you know, scientific consensus, therefore you can't question it, that it is extremely difficult to debate the science properly, because the science always gets clouded over by the political and emotive questions. And then there's another side to it, which is equally difficult, which is the political and social dimensions of what is going on, what the underlying agenda of the climate change lobby really is. And what we see is that those who adhere to the paradigm that we are suffering an extreme catastrophe, that basically the sky is falling, those who adhere to that view, then when you turn around and say, well, that may be true, but what I don't agree with and what I want to really, you know, make sure that you understand is that I don't want to have a dictatorial world government imposing taxes on me and limiting my freedoms and basically rolling back the sovereignty of the individual and sovereign nations. Now, when you bring that line of argument, what tends to happen is they immediately accuse you of being a conspiracy nut. And then you go down this other line of ridicule where, again, logic is thrown out the window. And I'm really trying to get through these roadblocks, these barriers, these walls of cognitive dissonance that are around this topic, because I think we need to get much more vocal, and this just needs to be the beginning. We need to start doing this regularly. We need to be getting out, talking to people, and really starting a movement. And so I'd like to, just on that note, welcome to the show my two guests for tonight, Phil Davis and Bill Catalianis. Guys, hi. Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, hi.
Herewood,
how are you?
Excellent. Okay. Hi. It is great to have you guys on the show. And what I want to do is if I can probably start with Bill. Now, Bill, you're the you're actually standing as a representative for the Climate Skeptics Party. Have I got that correct?
I was the Climate Skeptics candidate in the recent Bradfield by-election.
Great.
Whether I have a future political career or not is another question.
Okay, yeah. So you stood as a candidate, and now you plan to stand again in a future election?
Well, I'd like to, but I stood as an independent on this occasion because our party's not yet registered. We soon will be once the party's registered. Then the party will select future candidates. I'll put my hand up. Whether I'm selected or not, again, is another question.
I see. So that's a question for the party. So yes. The Climate Skeptics Party is now fully convened, as they say, and it's a fully functional political party.
It's just a matter of the paperwork going through the Australian Electoral Commission. We're just a couple of months off registration.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Bill, I was wondering if you could maybe just give us a recap on your experiences from Saturday. How did you find the day?
Oh, it was exhilarating. It was exhilarating. I mean, I've only had a one-week break after the election finished on last Saturday. Sorry, Saturday the 5th. So, I had a one-week break, and it was good to get back into it. It was exhilarating talking to, when I was campaigning, I was talking to ordinary people in the street. I hadn't actually gone face-to-face with our opponents. I mean, you'd meet the occasional opponent, but, this was 100% meeting opponents on Saturday. So
yes, indeed.
Quite exhilarating.
Did you get into any scientific debates? Because we did. I was curious to know whether you had the chance to speak to any people who were scientists or who claimed to be scientists.
I spoke to one lady who claimed to have some scientific credentials, and to my surprise, she'd never heard of the hockey stick. So, and then she began with her rantings about who was funding me. So that was as far as our science discussion got.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because I find this this particular train of thought that they often have when they start saying that all of the climate skeptics are being secretly funded. Yeah. I find this quite interesting because they have, I hate talking in this us and them kind of way, but basically, you know, many of those who adhere to the hardcore views about CO2 and climate change are running the argument now that we are conspiracy theorists. Now, however, at the same time, they themselves, at the drop of a hat, will talk about some vast conspiracy whereby all climate skeptics are being funded by ExxonMobil. This is what I mean by the difficulty in having a factual argument based on logic, because it seems that one of the first things that gets thrown out of the window is logic. I don't know if you've experienced it.
Yes, it's all. I mean, I've met a young liberal during the campaigning who was a science student, and her immediate reactions were, in attempting to talk to her, what was coming out of her mouth was not science, but the rhetoric that gets thrown at us, the political rhetoric that gets thrown at us. And, you know, she thought that she was qualified to speak in those terms because she was a science student. I couldn't believe it. I mean, she was not a science student. She was a political student, basically. This propaganda that they put out against us seems to be drummed into them in science school.
Yeah, there's a complete blending of rational, scientific, logical thought with rhetoric, emotive rhetoric. And, when a politician does it, well, we know that politicians are trained to do it and we know to expect it. But when the average person does it without even realizing they're doing it,
that's right.
That worries me very much more than the politicians doing it. Yeah. Now, look, at this point, I might just welcome Phil into the discussion. Phil Davis of TMA, Truth Movement Australia.
Thanks, Harold.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show, Phil.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Just quickly, I'm basically an activist. I work with Truth Movement Australia, help organise meetups in Sydney and run the website. Just going back to the march on December 12th, I think one of the main issues is people are unaware of the power of NGOs. And the argument that was made by a couple of the people there on the day was that we were funded, anti-politics and we were backed by oil, when in fact NGOs are in reality the funded groups. We certainly aren't funded. We're activists that look at a different view to the mainstream, which is for a good reason, because we don't look at the... We have access to information because we look underneath the surface at the issue. So we have information that the public doesn't have, because the public goes mainly by what they hear on TV and what they're told by their politicians and what they... a belief system formed over a number of years for a number of reasons. So,
absolutely. Phil, your voice is breaking up a bit. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to pause and do a reconnect, because I'm getting a lot of break up there. So if you guys can just stand by, I'm just going to basically break the connection and reconnect. So stand by. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio Australia. Just had a little technical problem there. Anyway, we're back on landline off Skype. Phil, you were just basically describing your background with being an activist. Maybe you'd like to
I work with Truth Movement Australia. We do meetups bi-weekly in the city. We talk about a number of issues ranging from climate change to, you know, forced vaccinations. We get behind issues that are relevant to society. But enough about me. Going back to what we were talking about on the march.
Indeed.
On the day there was a lot of hate and anger that we were getting from people. We weren't going down there to start a fight. We were taking down alternative information, and we weren't having people actually read the brochures. A lot of people were just taking them and coming straight back with, no, that's not right. And I think that's a major issue, because what's becoming science these days is a whitewash, and alternative opinions are not allowed, and there's no platform for debate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Did you have a lot of... Did you get a bit of abuse? Like,
Yeah, I had a couple of... incidences. I had one lady right at the beginning that was, I think she spoke to Bill as well. She was disgusted. She came over and basically gave me a death stare that sent chills down the spine. And I said, look, you don't need to, what's going on? Where's this coming from? And I just told her my view on climate change. And she had her opinion as well. And I didn't see a reason to stare down at her. So it seemed to be a problem. There wasn't a platform for debate. It was a whitewash. There was no alternative opinion there that wasn't the standard opinion that was largely extracted from media and from political views, rather than people looking at the science. Because, if people looked at science and if they read things like the ClimateGate emails personally, they would have a totally different view on what's being sent down the TV line. So it's really access to information and what information you have and what's your agenda. The people that have the information on climate, on how climate works and the true nature of their own models, looking at the IRPC, they've got the information and they're treating it in a certain way, they're manipulating it, and then they're giving it to us, the public.
The IPCC,
the IPCC. Sorry, what
indeed.
Is it?
IPCC, yeah. There's so many acronyms in this business. But look, Bill... What do you think that there is any strategies that we can... Because what I'm really keen to do is to work on strategies for how we can start to have more impact. And I think because we're just really starting out as being activists in this area, we're obviously going to make mistakes. But each time we do something, we're going to learn from it. I feel like I've learned a few things from what happened on Saturday. I'm just wondering, like, you're working at a much more cutting-edge level, and you're really focused on this as your main interest. I mean, for me, this is one of many issues that are really important, but because I don't have it as my total focus, it's hard for me to have all of the facts at my fingertips to know the best way to deal with it. And what I think we need to do is to start working with people who are 100% committed on this to get you to help us to work out what is the best strategy, what's likely to be the best way to approach it, how do we talk to people? I don't know what you're thinking is on that.
We're scratching our heads about that too, Harold.
Right.
So a lot of our people didn't come down on Saturday because they think that the Saturday environment is a lost cause. All of those people down there were going to their green church for the day. They're part of the green religion. They are so far gone, it's almost pointless attempting to talk to them. And in a lot of instances, I believe that was true. Now, I don't know if we had any converts on the weekend or whether we even got 1% of those people down there to read our leaflet and give it a moment's thought. I just don't know, but other people in the party are quite sceptical of that approach.
Okay. But on the other hand, it's a good way of finding examples of the sort of problem you're going to have to deal with anyway. And, you know, if you can't start to deal with it, then, you know, you're not necessarily going to make that much progress. Because I'd like in a minute to play an excerpt from an interview that we did with a man who was pretty passionate and he claimed to be a physicist. And, you know, maybe we can have a listen to that and analyze it, because these types of people are going to pop up as we start to try to put our message out. These people are going to be the type of people we have to engage with. And so it's kind of an opportunity, that place, to find all those people in one place. Because a lot of the time, a lot of the average people, taxi drivers, you know, more working class people, don't really have an argument. They just think, oh, of course it's rubbish. A lot of more average people are quite cynical. Please go ahead, yeah.
I've actually got a bit of a different opinion on that. I reckon at the moment climate change is the hot topic politically and socially as well. I've been talking to a lot of cab drivers because I'm on work cover at the moment, getting taxis to and from work, and 90% of them would agree within minutes and actually have the opinion themselves already that climate change is a tax scam.
No, that's what I was saying.
That was actually what I
was arguing, is that a lot of these people who are kind of, you know, they're not sort of head in the clouds type people. They're people who are working for a living, and they know they're being ripped off. Whereas there are a lot of people who are living in some kind of la la land, to be honest with you.
Exactly.
And, exactly right. There's probably more. How should I put it? The people who weren't there on Saturday are probably more easy to convince in terms of giving them some science, giving them some information, and they will listen and they will review it. Whereas if you go to someone who is part of the green religion, they'll basically tear up your leaflet in your face.
Indeed.
Exactly. We had a bit of that on the day. Had a few
little old ladies tearing up my leaflets.
And I might add,
there were quite a few litter bugs amongst all those environmentalists.
Absolutely. Mm. Look, one of the strategies that I intend to pursue with this radio podcast is to expose criminal fraud, because I actually feel that is one avenue that can potentially break through even massive cognitive dissonance from the part of people who don't want to look at facts, because criminal fraud does exist. And we know it's happening. We know it's been happening with the carbon trading scams.
Yeah, it's been reported.
And we know it's happening on a scientific level as well.
And politically.
Politically. And so where we've got vested interests, where an individual stands to benefit from having a particular point of view, that needs to be investigated and exposed. And in many cases, I'm not saying it's necessarily criminally prosecutable, but from a moral sense, if you can prove that a university academic is basically on the take and getting massive vested interest and also telling lies, also, you know, readjusting, as they say, you know, homogenizing the raw data records to change a cooling trend to a warming trend, I think that we have to expose that, and we have to be really focused on it. We need to find these people. We need to get the facts clear, then we need to confront them. That's one of the things I'm planning to do with Truth News over the next year or so.
Have you covered ClimateGate already in one of your podcasts?
We did the whole show on it last week. But basically, I think we're going to be covering it constantly for the next few months. Last week we covered the issue of the an article that was published on whatsupwiththat.com that shows that the temperature records in Darwin have been adjusted in a quite a radical way, and this extends ClimateGate beyond the questions about whether people were behaving in a bullying way, or whether they were deleting emails, or corrupting the peer review process. This is taking it to another level, but it answers some really important questions, because with the whole ClimateGate debate, we're being told in the media, because it's now become a media story, that yes, all these scientists behaved badly, there's been interviews on the BBC with some of the top, associates of one of them, the guy Phil Jones, who's had to step down from his job, and in that interview, the guy said, well, of course his behaviour was terrible, but that doesn't mean the facts are wrong. The facts are 100% correct. The science is completely correct. It's just that he behaved badly, and this is the way they're spinning it now. Well, we need to get into the facts, and that's what this news channel is for, and that's what I think I'm going to keep doing. But at the same time, continue, Bill. Yeah,
don't have much faith in their own investigation as well. I mean, they're going to be investigating their own man, Phil Jones.
Indeed,
and that's like putting the fox in charge of the hen house. It's blatant what they've done. Our president, Leon Ashby's put a great summary PowerPoint presentation together on ClimateGate. For anyone who's interested, you can go to our website, climateskeptics.com.au.
Great site, by the way. Excellent site.
Click on the PowerPoint presentations. There's a few interesting ones there, and that's one that's been recently edited. It's a good short summary to save you reading reams of paper. On ClimateGate. The BBC and the IPCC are all playing it down. And it seems to have been forgotten in the last couple of days. I guess we'll be lucky if we ever hear of it again from them.
Yeah, it was blown up into something, and then it can just equally quickly just dissipate and disappear.
Well, it didn't get as much coverage as Utegate.
Right. Right.
There's been a bit of a push, and there'll be a continued push for some major investigations into it. But as you said, basically public opinion is what needs to be adjusted, and the media's in control of that. So they're going to direct the nature of whatever investigation the way they please. And it's up to people getting the word out on a level saying you need to get this information yourself on a continual basis to be aware of the issue in order to have an opinion on it, really, and to be able to affect change. So you can't, I think that's the key, yeah.
Absolutely.
In our shouting matches on Saturday, I was trying to put a plug in for ClimateGate, and it seemed to me some people had never heard of it. Some of environmentalists down there had never heard of it, let alone the hockey stick.
Sure.
But this is what's shaped the chants that are on the TV all the time. We need to stop these emissions before the ocean rises and the trees and the world comes to an end, before countries start going under, and that's what sparks the fear that causes people to herd up on these days to call for things that, like the Copenhagen Treaty, that are going to go in directions that they have no clue about, because they haven't looked at the Copenhagen Treaty, they haven't read it. So it's That's the issue, yeah.
It's really a critical time in our history. If this gets through, it's pretty scary stuff from here on in. Our children will be taught junk science in schools, and
it'll be the death of science and the beginning of a total financial, economic, political enslavement, basically, for mankind on a global scale. Unfortunately, I mean, that's realistically what it is.
And my research has shown that this issue as bad as it is only one of a whole lot of issues that are very similar. And what I see it is being a malaise of our time, which is fitting in very, it's like a sickness almost, but it's fitting in very nicely with the agenda of thugs.
Yes.
And I'd like to just draw a direct parallel between that and the fascism that swept the world, you know, 70 years ago, 70, 80 years ago, when there was a kind of a malaise of thinking. I mean, you had ridiculous ideas about eugenics, about, you know, the world need to the world would, human race would die out if the weaker genes weren't erased from the gene pool. And, you know, these outrageous scientific ideas were being promulgated all around the world in universities, and people went along with it. Some people stood up and said it's terrible, but most of them weren't listened to. It was believed, it was followed, it was being practiced. People were being sterilized in hospitals all over the United States.
Up until the 70s, I think.
Well, it got a very bad name after the Second World War, but they did keep doing it on the quiet. But up until the Second World War, they were boasting of it. They were proud of it. It was a theory that it was social Darwinism. They believed that this was really important. It was really scientific, and we just have to sterilize the people who are of weaker gene pools. And of course, you know, the fascists and then the Nazis came in, and they just took that a couple of steps further. And what do you know? Next they're actually exterminating people. And then, you know, they started with the mentally ill, and then they moved on to all the other people that they didn't like, and then, you know, whatever. It became insane. It became, you know, these irrational belief systems actually become, you can't predict it. You can't exactly predict where it's going to go. But the trend is, once these irrational belief systems take over with warmongers and corporate thugs driving it, it will lead to this. And this is what I really want to keep emphasizing and keep, you know, bringing up to our audience, is that this is a critical issue.
Yes, well, if the cost of living rises dramatically, as it will if we adopt an ETS or if we sign on to Copenhagen or both, it really will be the survival of the fittest, the richest, actually, survival of the richest. The poor people will fall off the edge of society, fall off and die.
Well, that scandal's recently come out with the Danish leaked papers. Rudd's been exposed, and that's probably not going to hit the media at all, that issue. Just Google that one. There's a couple other things that I'd like people to look at as well. Go to YouTube and look for the Armed Response to Climategate question, for an example of what Herb was talking about before, with this sort of Nazi brainwashed sort of response to, and very aggressive response from a professor. Stephen Schneider was the name of the gentleman getting asked by a journalist at a UN conference. Have a look at the video, you'll see it. But he basically...
How do we find that video, Phil? How do we
search for YouTube, go to Armed Response to Climategate question, and you'll see a journalist, a registered journalist at a UN conference, ask a question about Climategate and be told by the Professor Stephen Schneider that he has no respect. I can have a look at it, but he has no respect for that question and won't answer it. And then a heavy-handed guard comes over and basically ejects the registered reporter from a UN conference for asking a question about Climategate. That's the issue. That's what we're up against here, is basically an armed response. It will come to an armed response. So we need to get the word out now before it gets to that point, obviously.
Before it's too late.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've just got that. I've got that audio up here. Actually, I might just play it for us right now.
Sure.
I'll just play it. Journalist Philim McAllier asks Stanford professor Stephen Schneider some inconvenient questions about climate change. Let's just play it.
What do you think of the behaviour of Professor Phil Jones in asking colleagues to delete emails and the destruction of publicly funded data was gathered by public funds?
I don't know what he asked, what he said. I don't make comments on redacted emails presented to me by people whose values I don't trust. I would have to see the whole thing, so I cannot very well comment. What I can say is that private communications that people have between each other certainly are not public documents. And
but the university has confirmed they are accurate.
Everybody says privately. Well, now, let me, I agree, we'll make it short.
I'm going to ask you to shut that off for a second, please. Can I just see your badge?
Yes, sir. Sorry, I have a member of the press. I want that to be a professional.
If you don't shut that off, I'm going to take it away from you.
Sorry, this is. Sir, we have the press.
I don't care.
Says, I have to shut it off. If it happens again, take it away from you. You go now. Is that understood? Thank you very much.
This is
okay. No, I just want to take your badge.
So that's just one example. That's happening all over the place.
You can hear it in Kerry O'Brien's tone tonight. I mean, we've had ClimateGate. He's reported on ClimateGate, and the way he carries on, he's forgotten about ClimateGate or he's ignoring ClimateGate altogether. They're just trying to steamroll past it now.
They're trying to wrap it under the rug before it becomes an issue, because all of the grassroots networks globally, you know, We Are Change, which is an international network, truth movements all over the globe, including mainstream organisations as well, are behind this issue, so it's becoming a complete shutdown in the media.
Indeed. Look, we're just going to take another quick break here, and then when we come back, I want to also play some audio from our interview, our random interview that we conducted on Saturday. So we'll just take a quick break, and we'll be back.
Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au.
Okay, we're back with Truth News Radio Australia, and tonight we're talking to Phil Davis from Truth Movement Australia and Bill Catalianis from the Australian Climate Skeptics Party. Now, on Saturday, as I was covering the events which took place, an impromptu debate sprung up down there in Martin Place, and I managed to get the camera rolling. I didn't get it rolling early enough, unfortunately, because there were some things that were said at the beginning which set the tone, which was quite abusive. But I'd like to play some of it, and I'd like us to maybe reflect on what was said, and I'd also like to reflect for my own benefit on how we might have conducted that better, because I think in some of the responses on the YouTube thread that's been posted here are that, you know, it looked like we were ganging up on this guy. And while I think that that's not really correct, I think perceptions are important, and you can always learn from what you do. And so just have a listen, and we'll see what we think. Just start it playing here.
Are you not a climate scientist?
I'm not a climate scientist, but I'm a physicist.
Okay, so if the science is in,
yeah.
Is the quantum theory proven? Is Einstein's theory of relativity in? Is it?
They're all in.
Is the debate closed? Have the theories been unified?
They have not. No, we don't have a grand unified.
The science is never in. The
sun is an absolutely important part of the climate.
Indeed, right? It is.
Absolutely. If we didn't have a sun, of course, we wouldn't be here. But
is it man-made?
The change that we're seeing today is man-made. Absolutely, it's man-made. We've nearly doubled the amount of carbon dioxide, and carbon dioxide is a critical greenhouse gas which traps heat that has come from the sun, from radiating back into space. So when you change the balance between heat in and heat out, the temperature rises. Basic physics, absolutely basic physics. And it's absolutely been proven by a thousand...
What percentage of the greenhouse gases is carbon dioxide?
What percentage of greenhouse gases is carbon dioxide? That depends on the humidity. Because water vapour is the other critical greenhouse gas. But the difference between water vapour and carbon dioxide is that carbon dioxide is persistent in the atmosphere. Water vapour comes and goes depending on the temperature and depending on the water that's available. So carbon dioxide
is recycled by plants that breathe it.
That's absolutely. Carbon dioxide is recycled, except when you take carbon from permanent stores in the ground and burn it, then it's not recycled. That's coming from something which has not been in the atmosphere for tens of thousands of years, potentially millions of years, and you're permanently increasing the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. That permanent increase in carbon dioxide changes the balance of heat coming from the sun and leaving back into space.
You mean that the CO2 that comes from the ground is different than the one that we breathe out?
One of the critical flaws in the anti-climate change movement, the people like you who say that climate change is not real...
Us douchebags.
If you wish to call yourself douchebags, that's fine.
Is that
climate change is natural? This is what you say. You say climate change is natural, therefore it can't be caused by man. That is exactly the same as saying that bushfires are natural, therefore they can't be caused by arsonists.
What percentage of all of the greenhouse gases are created by man, or what they're calling greenhouse gases?
Why do the polar ice caps on Mars melt and contract and expand at the same rate as ours?
We're not talking about the climate change on Mars.
It's the same thing.
No, it's not.
It doesn't make polar bears drown. Your shirt says that polar bear on there. Polar bears do not drown. They're the fastest and most skilled land swimmers on Earth. They can swim for kilometres at a time.
Talking about polar bears does not prove climate change wrong, okay? You can say...
No, but you're using it as an emotive argument. You're using it as an emotive argument to get people upset about it.
Emotive arguments are not necessarily incorrect either. Right. If you're having a scientific debate,
you can't bring emotion.
Let's have a scientific debate, which is what we were having. Scientific
debate. You've got a lot of heart on your T-shirt, mate. I don't think you can say that you're not bringing emotion into things.
Exactly.
I'm a carbon-based organism, and I do love it. I love water, and I love oxygen, which is two-thirds of carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide, in a high enough concentration, will kill you. Okay?
It will kill you.
So saying that it's not a toxic gas is also wrong, okay? It is a toxic gas in certain concentrations, but we're not talking about it being a toxic gas. We're talking about the effect it has on the climate.
So what about carbon monoxide, methane? What about those?
They're also important gases.
So why just CO2?
It's not just CO2.
Why a carbon tax? Why not a methane tax?
It is also a methane tax, right? When we talk about everything. Talking about all greenhouse gases in relative proportion. Methane is a much more critical, has a much greater effect than carbon dioxide.
So why is it
methane? So we talk about equivalent tons of carbon dioxide.
It is a methane tax. It's a tax on everything.
We agree on that.
It's not a tax on everything.
It's a tax on everything.
It's not a tax on everything.
It eventually will be a tax on you breathing out, because you breathe out carbon dioxide, right?
No, that's natural carbon.
So where do they draw the line?
They draw
it absolutely fine. Because he's misguided. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's trying to simplify a very complex argument. Have I heard of what?
Climate gate.
No, like to read the article. Idea what climate gate.
Oh, well, this is educating.
No, I haven't.
Okay. So I heard of the leaked emails.
Yeah.
Okay, listen to this. I've just completed Mike's nature trick of adding in the real temps to each series for the last 20 years, i.e. from 1981 onwards, and from 1961 for Keith's to hide the decline.
Yeah. So when scientists talk about a trick, they're not always talking about something that's fraud. Okay. That's not my research, so I can't say.
Yes, sir, but these are emails.
They're real emails. Yeah, just like all those real emails that were sent from Godwin Gretsch. I mean, emails can be made up. Emails can be real. Whatever.
They've admitted to it.
This email does not disprove hundreds.
They've admitted they're real.
This email does not disprove hundreds of years of science. Hundreds of years of science have added together.
How about tens of thousands of years of science which didn't exist back then?
And millions of years. The climate models that we have today explain the climate changes of tens of thousands of years ago as well.
Using the CRU data, which is proven to be fraudulent data, sir.
Your model for our climate
is wrong because you haven't used it to prove how climates have changed in the past. You don't actually have a model for the climate. What you're doing is you're saying, that's wrong, but I don't have an alternative model for how the climate works. You guys need to go and actually read about...
I've done a lot of reading.
Clearly you've got it wrong, right?
Yeah. Because
it's a religion. You guys are religious.
Not religious. I'm a scientist. Yeah. I don't believe a thing.
So
I only know
like Jesus.
So the answer is to forcibly, using force, extract money from people.
Yeah, that's what tax is. And we tax lots of things. There's a GST. We pay 10% tax on everything we buy.
And so you want more tax then?
I'm not saying I want more tax.
Well, you're going to get it.
No.
This is what you're rallying for. You want more tax. You're asking the people at Copenhagen to give you more tax.
I want to switch tax. I want to tax things.
By globalists that are unelected.
Can I just ask you one thing before you go, sir? Do you concede that the temperature has been declining since 1998? Do you concede that point? Do you deny that point?
Okay, we'll just stop it there. Well, that was pretty interesting. What did you think of that, Bill?
Well, he's well trained in alarmism science. He knows his stuff.
Yeah.
I guess he hasn't read much from an opposing viewpoint. Just on the carbon tax business, it was hard to hear parts of it, but I'm not sure it was clearly put to him that the ETS is a hidden carbon tax on everything because there is energy in everything. So if Woolworths have to pay higher electricity costs, higher energy costs, those costs will flow through to the groceries. The manufacturing of those groceries, there's so much energy in everything we consume that a tax on energy basically immediately works its way through to a tax on everything, every conceivable consumer item, even a toothbrush.
And what do you think about his claims that it's not just a carbon tax, it's also a methane tax? And I mean, is that...
Well, the workings of Kyoto did tax a few other greenhouse gases, methane being one of them. So he was correct in saying that.
Right. But in terms of the way it practically works, in terms of other things that might cause warming, according to the theory of global warming, such as water vapor or methane.
No, well, they're not going to tax water vapor because they can't.
But this really highlights the problem with it, doesn't it? Basically,
water vapor is the major greenhouse gas. 95% of the greenhouse gases are water vapor, and if they could find a way to tax it, I'm sure they would, but they can't. So they're pinging on poor old little minuscule amount of carbon dioxide and a few other minor gases. I mean, methane's terribly small. We're talking about a terribly small amount of methane, but they've demonised methane as being 300 times worse than carbon dioxide, and then there's other gases which are 1,000 times worse than carbon monoxide. And through the Kyoto Protocol, if you put an incinerator in to cut out some other terrible pollutant, well, you got great financial rewards because it was like 1,000 times, one tonne of such and such gas was worth 1,000 tonnes of CO2. So you had a windfall, and some chemical companies were making more money out of Kyoto than they were out of their chemicals.
That's interesting.
I reckon we should recommend everyone reads the Kyoto, if you can, Kyoto Agreement and 2007. And look at the Australia Clause. Australia Clause is what's hurt all the farmers and transferred basically wealth from farmers to the government through the government meeting Kyoto agreements, which is just that's what Rudd's taken to Copenhagen. He's going to go and get a bucket load of money, and it's not going to go back to the farmers. I recommend that everyone look at Googling Peter Spencer, who's a farmer at the moment, who, as far as I'm aware, is still on a hunger strike. Last time I looked at it, which was yesterday, he was on the 19th day. Look into that. It's quite a lengthy story, but it's one that we should get behind and support Peter Spencer and the Australian farmers who are basically being robbed by the government.
Great. Excellent.
Rudd is strutting the world stage, claiming Australia has met its Kyoto targets, and John Howard did the same before him. And it's all because they've stolen the land use rights of Australian farmers like Peter Spencer. They've stolen their right to use their land. They've said you can't touch any vegetation on your
carbon
land.
Sink.
Your land is now a carbon sink. So in terms of its value, it's lost all its value in terms of its real estate value. So these guys have farms and they've now ended up with carbon sinks.
I'm really interested in this use of language, you know, Bill, because we, you know, as I was saying earlier, you know, this emphasis on carbon, you know, even over and above everything else, and this using this word carbon is almost metaphysical. It's got a metaphysical connotation. The carbon, it's like saying, you know, the carbon is like sins, and the sins must be purged.
Well, it's been labelled as a pollutant, hasn't it?
Well, yeah. But it's more than a pollutant. Pollutants are all kinds of things. You know what I mean? This is like a universal evil.
Anything's a pollutant at a certain concentration. So,
sure, I mean, and there's all different...
To call carbon a pollutant is ridiculous, because what humans can do to by adding CO2 to the atmosphere anthropogenically is nothing. You know, we can't really impact the environment with CO2, basically. You know, a volcano goes off, it's going to add more than we can in a year.
Well,
so it's, you know,
carbon
is junk.
It's a good analogy you use... Harewood, because Peter Spencer is paying for our sins, our apparent or our perceived sins.
Yeah.
The government's used him. The government is, in effect, crucifying him to pay for our sins so we don't feel the pinch of having to pay for Kyoto. The government's decided to take it out on him because him and a few other farmers are such a small number, they barely have a voice, and that's why Peter has resorted to a hunger strike.
Well, yeah, there's 109 million hectares of Australian private land has been reserved for carbon sink, basically stolen for carbon sink Kyoto targets, and, you know, 22% reduction of CO2 emissions for Australia is attributed to these farmers. And has the media mentioned the farmers? As Rudd said, has he gone to Kyoto and thanked the Australian people? No, he's made it look like he's pretending it's we're in a civilised state over here, we're meeting our obligations, and we're at one with the global plot to reduce CO2 emissions, which is going to have a massive impact on crops, on agriculture, on lives, on starvation. So it's a global issue that needs to be on the front of everyone's tongues, and we need to get behind it.
Yeah, we've got World Vision calling for CO2 reductions. I mean, Tim Costello seems like an intelligent man. Surely he knows that CO2 produces more food crops. What's wrong with his brain?
It is
well,
frustrating, isn't it?
We've seen the first chilling signs of the possible future direction that this can take, with the Chinese delegation to the Copenhagen conference calling for a planetary one-child policy. Now, that's one form of population reduction, okay? Another form of population reduction is famine.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you there are many people in the environmental movement who, that they're insane, they're morally insane, but they would think that a famine that killed off a billion or so people would be a good thing, because it would lower the carbon burden of our planet. And of course would. There'd be all those less people breathing out. And that's the logic. That's the inexorable direction that this insane ideology is taking.
Yes, I see humanity as a virus on the planet.
And unfortunately, what I think the problem is people are in such a state of fear globally that that they can't really... they're basically like a herd of cattle now being pushed around from one issue to another, whether it be swine flu pandemics to global climate catastrophe. And being a herd, they can't really rationally look at issues on a individual basis. Rather, it becomes a reaction to the current social climate, the current issue, whether, you know, at the moment it's climate change. We need to all get back green energy, get energy efficient light bulbs, stop polluting, stop throwing things away, and it becomes a religion, which is what we're facing now. It's that we need to deconstruct the religion by getting information into individual hands and get dialogue going on a community basis, which is key to getting this sorted, I believe.
Yeah, I think you made some really good points there, Phil. And I really want to get this out to our listeners that we have to get more active, folks, because at the moment there's just a tiny, tiny handful of people who are trying to change this. And without the numbers, we can't do it. So I'm saying this to try and stimulate people, because we are going to be active. We're going to start doing regular street actions, interviews, basically getting out onto the streets with cameras and with people and with activists and with information.
That's right.
And you're totally on the page with that, aren't you, Phil?
Definitely. That's the key. And I think another thing we can do is set up your email account, whether it be Gmail, Yahoo, get all of your MP's email addresses. It's not hard. I can email them off to you if you like. But basically, track them down, and when you have an issue, email it off to your MPs, because, believe it or not, this politics does work if you can get to the individual on a personal level.
Yeah,
and if
great.
You can get them to change their paradigm and start working for the people, then politics works. But it doesn't work if people aren't getting dialogue with their politicians, because they end up segregating themselves into their you know, game that they end up playing, and you can't blame them, really. If there's no people calling for them to step off the monopoly board, then they're not going to.
Well, yeah, and this is what has happened with the Liberal Party, I believe, because I think that the policies of the Liberal Party have been changed by the people. I think it's a sign of some hope, because do you read it that way too, Bill?
Yeah, well, what happened 4 days before the Bradfield by-election just stunned all of us. Well, if you recall, in the week prior to the 5th of December, we almost had the ETS pass through Parliament. There was a massive email campaign to senators by Australians, and senators' email accounts were getting flooded with these emails, and they stood up and took notice, and we prevented the ETS from getting through, and the Liberal leadership got spooked by it all and overturned their leader and their policy. A lot happened in that first week of December, and it was a small victory for our side, the side of reason.
Exactly, yeah. We need to keep pushing, though, yeah, because they're coming back in February, obviously.
They'll be back in February.
Yeah.
It's on again in February. We have to pick ourselves up and do it all over again in February. I don't know what's going to come out of Tony Abbott's mouth in late January, early February. I hope for the best, but who knows?
Well, remember, he was ready to sign up to it at one stage, and now he's against it. February, he might, do another flip-flop. It's possible. I think it's only if we can get real democracy happening again. And again, I just try to emphasize the fact that democracy can only exist if you exercise it. If you don't exercise your rights, you will lose them.
Exactly. Going back to the interview you played before, because you asked the question, you know, what could we have done better? Or
yeah,
I think a couple of things we could have done, and this applies to, you know, contacting MPs, etc., is going back to the interview, refuting arguments. When he brought up the arguments, the gentleman that was being interviewed, we didn't refute those arguments. We brought up counter arguments, and both sides used emotive arguments, which don't really get anywhere either. It didn't have much factual evidence from either side, which is totally understandable from both sides. It is a very emotional issue, but to really get anywhere, people need to have you know, facts and figures
totally,
and to look at it from a logical point of view rather than, you know, looking at things like polar bears and what the gentleman was saying is, you know, this sketch he brought up.
Well, no, but that argument could have been taken further. And what I'll say about the polar bear argument is it can be used very effectively. But what you have to do is you've got to get the opponent into a situation where they're going to either concede or deny a point.
Exactly.
Now, the point about polar bears is that polar bear numbers are 95% above what they were 50 years ago.
Sure.
This is verifiable, provable, totally in... You can't really dispute it without being an idiot. Okay,
that's what I mean by coming refuting his points. We need to, when we're in dialogue with people on the street or in emails, we need to refute their illogical nonsense science based statements with, no, this is the actual fact. This is the ice core record. This is the whatever CO2 level.
The emotive arguments about polar bears, and he's quite right to say that you can use emotive arguments if they're correct. But the problem about the polar bear argument is it's not correct. If polar bears were a terribly endangered species, I wouldn't be saying this. But I've looked into it. They're not an endangered species.
Sure.
So, you know, it's an emotive argument purely for emotion that just flies in the face of facts. And that is really offensive.
Exactly.
That is offensive to anyone who's got any respect for science.
Exactly. And I think what we need to do is ask questions. Ask questions like... If you believe in anthropogenic global warming, which is what we're up against, people that believe in that, and if they also believe in that man can reduce the impact of global warming, is there not better solutions than a global tax which will impact economy, environment in such negative ways? Can we not look at using these high technologies that we have? Can we not put money into science that will fix the problem? You know, there's a million ways of looking at it, rather than a global tax and creating an entire new bureaucracy, an entire new legal system, an entire new trading scheme, an entire new interest-based system around all of this. Is there not a better way? With these trillions of dollars, all these millions and billions of dollars, can't we just fix the problem? If there is a problem, can't we fix it? That's what we need to ask. Like, rather than going, you know, there's catastrophic global warming threat, and then panicking and bringing about a global governance to fix the problem through fear, can't we look at it at a community-based level? What does the community need here? What do they need in Africa? What do they need in China?
I think you might have some difficulties running that argument, because what I have found is with the people who adhere to the global warming belief is that they also adhere to the belief that we need government and tax to solve the problem. And then you'll end up getting into a political argument about how we should run society, which then can get very, very messy and go in all different directions. And you'll even find within your own activist group, there'll be five or six completely different points of view on that.
Yeah,
I know anarchists, communists, you know, free market libertarians, and they're all quite extremely different points of view, and they're all interesting. I don't rule out any of these views. I think even Marxism has some interesting things to say. You know,
the point is the debate's not over, is it? It's the dialogue can't exist because, as Gore and, you know, the governments are saying, the debate's over, and therefore ending the ability for dialogue, which is death of science, really. We need to... That's the core of the problem. The fact that we went down to this march and we couldn't express our opinion without being attacked shows that there's a major issue there.
Well, the corruption of science to serve a political end is at the core of this problem.
Somebody's told a big lie and we're left trying to fight it. We shouldn't even be having to fight it if people told the truth in the first place.
Yeah.
But, somebody puts out a fiction and then they say, oh, well, you prove that I'm wrong. Well, you prove that you're right. I mean, there is no proof. They have not provided any evidence that CO2 causes warming. All they've provided is misleading information to make some gullible people believe that CO2 causes warming. And they simply have to be told, look, it's warming that historically causes CO2. Get that through your sick head.
We had the Ice Age threat in the 70s. Now, which is it? You know, people need to look into what's causing these mass hysterias. What is, what causes that? What groups are behind that? And address that issue, because it's the same groups and it's the same
Well,
issues.
I don't know if you've looked at that at many of these other issues, but I presume you have. But what I've seen is that the same core agenda of globalization and control paradigms, which we see coming out of the global warming so-called debate, is the exact same agenda that we see behind the war against terror. And it's the exact same agenda we see between the overhyped swine flu and behind other environmental issues, such as, you know, fears of overpopulation.
Using fear as a manipulation tool, yeah.
Yeah, and once you see that the agenda really is using these issues to forward the agenda. The people are using these issues to forward the agenda, but the agenda was already there. The agenda was power, control, domination, exploitation, enslavement. Okay, that's the agenda. Now they use global warming one year. They might use swine flu in another year. They might use terrorism in another year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll just stick to the global warming bit. The United Nations was looking for a cause to give itself a reason for existing, and so they came up with global warming a few decades ago.
Yeah, the Club of Rome guys as well.
Yes, Club of Rome assisted, and this has all been predetermined. It's documented
in fact,
the early 90s that this is what they wanted to convince us of, and this would give them what they needed, world government and money and power. Now, there's a whole lot of other people with other agendas that have also joined in on the bandwagon. There's Al Gore making a packet, and there's other people with other agendas also joining in, each with their own individual agenda. Or maybe sometimes they overlap.
Absolutely.
There are many different agendas in this whole scheme. There are just too many of them, actually.
Definitely.
So true. Guys, we're going to have to wind it up shortly. It's been a really superb discussion. Are there any closing statements that either of you'd like to make, or you know?
We were covering Enron early on, and I was just looking for it while we were having a break, and I found it. Enron had a sulfur dioxide cap and trade program running in the 1990s, and they wanted to expand their business opportunities. And so in the mid-90s, they were trying to convince Clinton to start up a carbon dioxide cap and trade program.
Amazing, amazing. So it would first surface from Enron. Were the Europeans, when did the Europeans start their cap and trade? Because I know that they've had something going on there for a while. I don't know whether that predates that or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it might have been with Kyoto, but I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't the climate scare start with the Thatcher administration?
Yeah, Margaret certainly had a great contribution. Yeah, she paid scientists to go and find some global warming. She wanted to shut down the coal unions, and she wanted to promote nuclear energy. She had some regrets years later about doing all those.
Most of them do.
Being so smart. But she had a major contribution as well.
Yeah, sure. Just what my closing couple of things I'd like to mention is, Lord Mockton's been getting a lot of airtime at the moment, and I think he's got some great points. And that one of the videos I saw of his recently, he brought up the term Hitler Youth with regard to these activists that busted into one of their private conversations and had a chant or two regarding global warming. And I think that's a major part of the puzzle as well. We've got NGOs that basically get together with youth groups and university groups, and they sort of feed off each other, and we need to approach all of these groups individually along with the MPs. So I think if you're going to get a campaign of activism on a sort of keyboard warrior type point of view, get behind contacting youth groups, universities, MPs, and get them all hit with this sort of information, because it does have an effect after a certain amount of time. We've seen people like Barnaby Joyce going and running with real issues on a certain level. And lastly, please Google Peter Spencer and his plight, and get behind Australian farmers and help get the truth out, because that should be on mainstream news. That's really a serious issue. I mean, come on.
Totally agree.
If I can add one more thing.
Yeah.
It would, I just had an email from Leon. Apparently, Lord Monckton's coming to Australia in January.
Terrific news. In January.
Yep.
Well, I hope that we can talk to him. I hope I can interview him on this show.
Excellent.
Yep, that'd be good.
I would really, really look forward to doing that if I could
do that. Definitely have him speaking to an audience.
I am absolutely delighted to hear that. I mean, he's a very, very brilliant speaker, and we need that. We really need that. So thank you so much. Thank you so much, Bill, for making that happen, or helping to make that happen anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd like to thank yourself, Bill, also, because, just quickly, I ran into Bill. We met on the street, both doing a sort of activist-type job. I was handing out flyers, and Bill was doing a flyer drop at the time. So it just goes to show there is a community out there that is aware of these issues and working towards getting them out into the public. It's not, you don't have to sit at home and feel alone. If you have these alternative ideas, get out, get into the community, form a community if you need to, and we can fix things.
Great. And on that note, we'll say goodnight. Thanks, Phil and Bill, and I hope to talk to you guys again sometime soon.
Okay. See you guys.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Well, that about rounds it up for tonight, and I hope that everyone listening can understand the importance and really urgency of looking at these issues. We're going to keep doing it, we're going to keep bringing these up, and we're just not going to stop until we start to make some influence and start to turn this around. So good night from Truth News Radio Australia.